and welcome to the HSP World Podcast, a place and space for highly sensitives. With each episode, we have a conversation about an interesting HSP-related topic. We're holding space with you because HSPs only make up 15 to 20% of the population. So most of the time, HSPs are surrounded by non-HSPs, and HSP-only convos are a little bit different than non-HSP convos. We feel it's important for HSPs to hear this difference. We're not coaches or therapists. We're HSPs holding space with you. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rain, and our other wonderful co-hosts are Tanya and Beretta. Hey, Tanya.
Hi, Rain. Nice to see you today.
Nice to see you too. Hey, Beretta.
Hi. It's so good to be here with you guys.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Awesome. And we're starting a mini highly sensitive self-care series. So the next six podcasts will be on aspects of self-care we want to explore with you. The first in our series is emotional self-care for highly sensitive. So, and we're just using like a rough baseline for what emotional self-care looks like. So it's activities that help you connect, process, and reflect on a full range of emotions. And there's a couple of examples. So seeing a therapist, writing in a journal, creating art, playing music. So that's what it is, and a couple of examples. But Beretta, how do you practice emotional self-care? Do you have, you know, what are your thoughts and feelings on this topic?
Well, I think I over the years I tried a couple of different things. I did see a therapist for a long time when I was struggling with anxiety to work around or to work through those experiences and where they came from and how to handle them, I suppose. And then one of the main things I've learned over the years is not holding emotions in. You know, I'm a crier. I cry very easily. I can cry for lots of different reasons. It can be because I feel happy, but it can also be because I'm sad or I'm angry. But as I grew up as a child, I was often told that I couldn't cry or there wasn't a reason to cry, you know? So there was always something or someone telling me like, Don't cry. Suppress the tears, you know? And that's what I did for a very long time. And I always felt this almost choked up throat whenever you hold back those tears, and it's actually making it worse. Yeah. But I don't do that anymore. I just let those tears come, and it actually feels so much better if you can just let it go and let those tears come out when it feels that way. It's liberating in a way.
Yeah. So you gave yourself permission basically, right?
Yeah. And it's not so much thinking about, you know, what will other people think when they see me crying, or how will people respond, or what kind of impression will I make on other people when I cry in public, you know? I know, especially for my grandparents, they had like that generation almost feels like it was not okay to show any emotion, right? Or too much emotion for that matter. Right. So I was suppressing a lot of my emotions.
It's interesting that you're saying that, because I think cultural aspects of how we're raised can have a big impact too on us feeling okay expressing our emotions.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Like it's, you know, it's not only within a family, you know, a family hereditary line, it's cultural. It can, you know, it can extend beyond that into cultural. So it's a really big deal when, I want to say kudos, huge kudos for it, because it's a really big deal when you can break through that, fear of, you know, not being accepted, because that's a primary need humans have, to be accepted. Right. And, yes. and, you know, and instead attend to your own needs, because that's what you need to do to be healthy and to feel healthy. And, you know, how other people can or cannot handle that is up to them. That's up to them. Right. So I think that's awesome that you came to that point, Britta.
Thank you. Yeah. It didn't happen overnight. It's taken me a long time, but it's all part of the journey of being a highly sensitive person and discovering more and more about yourself and what it means to be a highly sensitive person. It also means that you have huge emotions and a very intense emotional experience. And by pushing it away, you're not accepting yourself as you are. And that's a big part of what I felt for most of my life. Like, okay, it's not okay to be the way that I am. And that's just not true. So releasing those emotions and showing them, even if people don't understand, it's just a part of me. It's just a part of my personality and how I respond to the things that go on in my life. And I just feel like, okay, people may not understand, but that doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to show my true self. So,
yeah,
and if awesome. it just feels so much better.
Yeah. There's actual scientific studies that say crying is a stress reliever.
Yes.
Like physically a stress reliever. Right.
Exactly.
And so if anybody listening is struggling with that, I would say Google it. And if anybody gives you, you know, kind of a hard time about it, say, look, I'm relieving stress. It's physically a process that the human body goes through. So,
yeah,
it's a completely natural and normal.
Exactly. Exactly. And it makes people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's why we feel self-conscious about it. But, you know, everyone, not just HSPs, walks around with unprocessed and emotions, right, that they're dealing with, which causes a lot of problems for everyone. So the more we can kind of get them out and process them in healthy ways, like crying, I think is a great thing.
Yes. And how about you, Tanya? What's some of the ways or a way that you practice emotional self-care?
Well, it's not really an activity like, you know, painting or, you know, playing the guitar or anything. Mm-hmm. But what I really try to do is just take a minute, sometimes not even a minute, to just express gratitude. Mm-mm. And to just be thankful for the things in my life that are going well. And the things, and more importantly, gratitude for myself and the things, and gratitude for the things that I've done so far in my life to get me to this point. Mm. So, and you know, all the choices that I've made, you know, like leaving a toxic family and environment to move across the country to start my life over, you know, things that I don't really look back on and say, wow, Tanya, look what you did for yourself, right? Because you get caught up in the day-to-day of things and the next problem or the next thing that you're worried about.
Yeah.
And so just taking that minute every day to have appreciation for the steps that I've taken to make my life healthier and safer are huge. And that's especially important if I'm having a really hard day, when I'm struggling with my, you know, mild to moderate depression or having self-doubt about the journey that I'm on, taking that time to think about, you know, where I was in my life 20 years ago, 5 years ago, even a year ago, and where I am today, it really helps to bring me into the present moment and gives me some sense of emotional balance.
Right. Which is so important for HSPs.
Yeah.
So important. So you've been crafting a good environment for yourself. You've been creating your own.
I have. It's been a long journey, you know, but, you know, coming, like I said, you know, coming from a really toxic childhood and, you know, a lot of emotional trauma and being caught in kind of a codependent, toxic environment and just finding my way out of that.
Yeah.
And taking some really big risks. Mm. And I with no plan and not really knowing how things were going to work out, but knowing that what I was doing was best for me, even though I was taking, you know, chances and everybody was telling me I was crazy to do it. Just kind of sitting in that space that, you know, wow, look what you did and look how much better your life is because of it. Yeah. It really helps my emotional state.
Yeah.
If I'm struggling.
Absolutely. I think that's super important too, Tanya, because I know a lot of HSPs and I know I can tend to be like that myself where we don't really give ourselves credit for the things that we've accomplished and the different hurdles we've overcome. And we don't often sit back and go, geez, you know, right on, you're doing great.
Yeah. Look what you did. And you know, and we don't all do have something. Yeah. And we all have something, you know, it doesn't have to be as drastic or, you know, as something that I did where, you know, moving across the country.
No,
I think if we really sit in that space, any of us can find those moments where we've done something like that for ourselves and kind of use that as a building block or momentum to do something else for ourselves that can give us what we need to improve our emotional health.
I like that. And when I was thinking about how I practice, one of the big game changers for me was how I practice emotional care was boundaries, setting the boundaries. That was a big one. So I wrote a little bit about that. And when I was thinking about this topic and said, from what I've learned so far, and this is from an individual's primary behavioral background experience, was adapting survival methods, sometimes toxic survival methods to deal with toxic behavior. And what I've been learning so far is when I was teaching myself how to set and maintain healthy boundaries, at first, sometimes I got it wrong in the beginning, and sometimes I'd get it half right, you know, and this would be what tripped me up. Feelings of guilt and shame. When I looked at why I was feeling these feelings, where these feelings came from, this is what I learned. So for me, I learned when I was young that I could protect myself by anticipating others' needs and placing their needs above my own. But when I first started setting healthy boundaries, a guilt feeling would happen and a shame feeling would happen. Guilt because I was putting myself first, and shame because my default was putting others ahead of myself. So at first, putting myself first felt selfish. So these feelings of guilt, selfishness, and shame were trying to drag me back into an old, ineffective, and toxic adaptation pattern, right? In relationships. Instead, I had to acknowledge and stay with these feelings, allow them, and give myself props for that. Because that goes to what you were saying, Tanya, about how, you know, you give yourself kudos, you give yourself props for others. And I think it's important to do that. And then I also made sure at the same time I was giving myself healthy doses of self-acceptance and self-forgiveness, right? And I still do it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, each time I practice setting and maintaining a healthy boundary, the guilt, selfishness, and shame feelings are becoming less strong because they don't fit. They don't feel right. They're beginning to feel glaringly wrong and aren't needed, right? So I'm training my mind to feel good about setting and maintaining healthy boundaries. And by doing this, I'm creating a really good environment for myself. Because setting healthy boundaries means by setting them in the first place, then it's just a matter of enforcing them. So maintaining them when necessary. And it gives me much more time to spend on what I'm interested in and doing things I love with people I enjoy spending time with and being grateful for it all. Right. So that was my big one. That was my big one for what I've been learning so far as I've been practicing emotional self-care is that one's been a pretty big one for me.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you mentioned forgiveness, because that's another one on my list, is forgiving myself for mistakes, or what I'll call missteps, and just understanding that every choice I make is just part of my journey, and learning to not be so, you know, we're always harder on ourselves, right, than we are on other people.
Absolutely.
But also a huge thing for me emotionally has been not just forgiving myself, but forgiving others. Mm-hmm. So forgiving my parents, you know, for not being the parents that I really needed, mm-hmm. Things like that. And just not carrying.
And the added layer to that too, because when you're setting and maintaining healthy boundaries, you know, you're having to do it in a way where, you know, you are doing this with forgiveness in your heart. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And, but your primary goal is ensuring that your well-being is the first and, you know, kind of foremost thing on the list. Right.
Yeah. And not carrying grudges for things that other people have done that have affected my life in negative ways. Mm. You know, this is a huge and probably one of the longest journeys that I've been on, is letting go, trying to let go and forgiving people who have hurt me, either intentionally or unintentionally. But just not carrying, it's such a weight, you know, to carry that feeling. Anger, resentment, and letting that go is really life changing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I find it has an energy to it, right? So if I can channel that energy to something that's going to be positive and beneficial for me, then that's how I'm going to channel. Because anger is energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's energy.
Oh, yes,
so,
it is.
You know, just like love and, you know, everything, all the emotions have, it's energy, you know, so it's, I found it helpful at times when I've been angry to channel it into things and creative projects and things I'm working on to move myself through that phase, to get rid of that energy, because I don't want to, you're right, Tanya, it's heavy.
Yeah. And if you come from, if you weren't taught, right, as a kid, that this is something that you can do, if you come from a family who never forgives and never forgets, you know, it really takes a lot of self-work, mm-hmm. and effort to kind of find your way out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and like Britta was saying, you know, she's seen a therapist before, which I know is really helpful to a lot of people. I personally haven't done that, but I know that it helps a lot of people. But yeah, just knowing that if you are in that space, that it can be done. It can be done, as you know, with time and with intention.
Yeah, I think that's the big one is the intention. I know, there was a point where I sought out a therapist, also, Britta, but my experience was a bit different. It was, I already knew I had PTSD. So when I was going to see, I think I went to see three different therapists, and none of them had heard of accelerated resolution therapy, which is the most successful therapy you can use for PTSD. Right. And, so then I basically went on a looking for a specific therapist that practiced that type of therapy. Then when I finally found that person, then I was able to do 12 sessions, and they were absolutely amazing, because that type of therapy actually uses a lot of the imagination. So, and that's something HSPs have an abundance of. So I found it just great, really, really helpful and really good. But it's not just HSPs, you know, these days, you know, a mental health, coming to realize that, oh, you might need some help. I mean, that could be the death of a loved one. You know, that could be you lose your job. That could be you're getting a divorce. That could be your, you know, COVID. You know, so there's so many things that can, you know, and it's very, you know, most people in their lifetime are going to experience something, some type of mental health situation. So it's, I think it is good that, you know, if to reach out and find what you need, you know, when you need it. I think it's really good to do your homework though, on therapists, if you're going to reach out for a therapist. Like I, like mine was positive, you know, in the end, Britta, but at first I found it really tough finding one, yeah. Finding one that first knew about the HSP trait and next, you know what I mean? Had this specific type of therapy I was looking for. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a different road for everybody, I guess, you know, how we navigate these things. But I think it is overall, I think it is it's a good thing. Some things, I don't know, as an HSP, I was basically taught never, you know, it was a toxic environment I grew up in. It was not good to, it was weak. If you reached out for help, you know, you're not to reach out for help basically. Right. So it's a big deal when you do reach out for help and you know, it's awesome. It's great, you know, because it's like giving yourself permission to be a human being. You know, you're just a human being. You're allowed to have times in your life where you're going to need a little bit of extra support. And that's just fine, you know, in whatever ways that shows up for you. Right.
Yeah. And I also feel there's like this, layers. So, and maybe that's also a way that I've grown over the years, that just by the way I interpret things and I can reframe certain situations, I feel I won't need a therapist or external support as quickly as I used to, maybe, because I've learned certain tools or certain ways to look at things that make it easier to cope. Or one of the things that I learned from my husband actually is nothing is ever as bad as it seems. And that's maybe an odd one, but sometimes I do tell myself that, because one day you can just have so many things and it feels even worse, or it feels so much bigger than it actually is, because maybe you're tired or it's the end of the day, you've had a busy day, or I don't know what else is going on. But then when you have a good night's sleep and the next day's there, it can already look a lot different. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do to keep my sanity is, with whatever situation that comes up or whatever lands on my plate, I try to find the lightness in there. Mm-hmm. Or at least something positive. And I'm not saying that you can ever have negative feelings. I'm not about toxic positivity at all, but just make it easier on yourself and focus on whatever good thing you can find.
Yeah. Things that make you feel good.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and there's a quote from the Dalai Lama where it might seem kind of oversimplistic, but I kind of think of it also when I'm struggling, is if a problem is fixable, if a situation is something that, you know, you can do about, then there's no need to worry. And if it's not fixable, then there's no help in worrying about it, right? There's no benefit to worrying. So mm-hmm. when you kind of take that into consideration in the big picture, that's something that really helps me. It's like, okay, is there something I can do about this? And if there is, you know, try to focus on a solution. And if there isn't, then how can I find ways to kind of set it aside or let it go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy to do so.
Oh, it's never easy.
I know sometimes
it's simple, but it's not easy. That's what I always tell my yoga students.
Exactly. No, and that's the thing, you know, sometimes people tell you like, so is it helping you? No, it's not helping you. So why worry? Yeah, I know, but it's not like I have this switch up here so I can turn it off and on, you know? It's really a process that you have to go through, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, find ways for yourself to break the negative spiral, or just to break out of that negativity, and you're the best expert on yourself and what works for you. Just try to find some things that work for you to get you out of anything that brings you down completely. And the sooner you notice, like, oh, I'm going there,
mm-hmm.
the better, because the further you sink in, the harder it is to get out of it.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think that's why it's really important to have, it's really important for HSPs, especially introverted HSPs, to have a couple of close relationships, because, you know, HSPs don't require a ton of, you know, they don't need to be going out, you know, every night and have 10 friends, different friends each night kind of a thing. You know what I mean? It's a quieter lifestyle, basically, you know? So yeah, I agree what you're saying there. I'm just wondering, are there any other things you guys can think of? Like, because some of the examples it said was, sorry if I'm getting off, activities that help you connect, process, and reflect on a full range of emotions.
I suppose you mean like journaling or...
Are there any other things that come to your mind that you just, like when I'm looking at this one, reflect on a full range of emotions. I notice sometimes when I'm walking in nature, I can reflect on a full range of emotions. It almost just happens on its own. I'm not trying to do it. But do you guys notice anything like that?
It happens, I guess. I feel it's almost Tanya's field of expertise, like being in the being in the moment and aware of what you're feeling. And it does happen. I know I used to journal. I don't do it anymore. I don't do it as often. Mm.
I think there's a lot of kind of, at least in my experience, kind of pressure that comes with journaling, to where, you know, you see a lot of things where people say, yeah, you know, you should journal every day, or, you know, you see people who say they journal every day. I would say if you're really in something, like you're in it, it's a good time to maybe just write it out, or, like I think I've mentioned before, talk it out, right?
Yeah.
Talking to yourself, talking to the picture on the wall, talking to your dog, making a video that you delete later. It's really been surprising to me, the video journaling, to where just the emotion that rises up by using my voice. And I think anytime as HSPs, when we can find ways to use our voice, like Britta was saying, you know, when she was told not to cry and she could feel it being caught in her throat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think a lot of HSPs struggle with this and have a lot of blockages in their throat chakra.
Right.
And so I think just using any opportunity, like I said, especially if it's not something that you want to do on a daily basis, mm-hmm. you know, when you're in, when you feel like you're in a crisis, mm-hmm. It's really a good way to, if you don't want to write it out, to just say it out or go into a closet and yell or, you know, something like that, just something to get it out of your body and into the world, even if, you know, nobody that you can see around you is listening, you know,
looking for, it makes me think of like, shake it out. Like
Exactly. So I think that's just, as far as like activities go, I feel like that's something that's really accessible to everyone.
Yeah,
right. If you say, I can't play the guitar, or, you know, I really want to learn how to play the guitar, but it stresses me out.
You
know, stuff like that can be stressful because we, you know, can be perfectionists and all of that, but just using your voice, in any way, I think is just something that HSPs need to do more of.
I fully agree. Well, thank you, Tanya and Britta, for sharing your experiences. And thank you to our highly sensitive listeners for sharing your space and time today. Feel free to join us on Instagram or Facebook. And if you'd like to have a conversation with us on the HSP World podcast, please email your topic to info@hsp.world and we'll be in touch. If you enjoy our podcast, you can support us by making a donation at www.hsp.world. Join us for our next podcast, where we'll be chatting about practical self-care for highly sensitives.